Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Hey, good morning again, and welcome back to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. I am Frankenberry, and we are back for another edition of the show. And I think, if I recall correctly, we're going to be talking today about, like, happy stuff, right?
Well, sort of. We're going to be talking about fun and the role that fun has in making us happy. Now, I know that sounds kind of obvious, but there's a science behind this, you guys. And today on the show, we're going to be talking to Dr. Michael Rucker. He's written a book called The Fun Habit: How the Pursuit of Joy and Wonder Can Change Your Life. And I got to tell you, I am a good way through the book, and he's right. These concepts are so simple, and I think a lot of us have forgotten how to have fun and the effect that it can have on our life, even when we're all grown up like we are now. And we're gonna talk to him all about it, Dr. Michael Rucker, PhD, in our next segment.
That sounds good. I mean, who isn't looking for the pursuit of fun?
Well, it's funny because we honestly do. Like, there are times I think we all kind of can get mired down a little bit in the day to day. Who has
you think?
Yeah. And, you know, I don't even like to look back on the last few years, you know, with the pandemic and the lockdowns, but especially, like, we're coming out of it now, if you're not all the way out of it. And it was a rough time. So now more than ever, we can really use some fun. And a couple of fun things on my agenda number
something
one
to complain about by any chance. Well,
I actually only have one small thing to complain about. I'll save that for last, because by the time we air this show, you will be able to listen to yours truly on our good friend Jeannie Kelly's podcast, which is called Credit Over Coffee.
Awesome.
Talk about fun. You know, it's so neat because, you guys, we've been doing this forever. Jeannie Kelly is a great friend of the show. She has a podcast called Credit Over Coffee. And sidebar, Frankenberry almost had a little credit issue that we were talking about off the air, but fortunately not.
And, yes.
So I interviewed with her. She actually, her podcasts are also video. So I think the link goes to her YouTube channel, and it's quick, and it's, you know, Jeannie, our audience knows Jeannie.
She's a bottom line kind of girl. She gets right to the point. One of the things I love about her. And she's a big deal. She's a credit expert. And she's been on the Today Show multiple times. She works with some pretty big names. So I'm sure that was fun. And I'm sure between the two of you, with your experience as a lawyer and divorce and her as credit, that's an excellent episode to listen to.
We had a great time. So I'll be posting that link as well. The second fun thing I've done is I participate. You guys know who Tony Robbins is, right?
Yes. Carol and I are both aware of Tony Robbins. Is he going to try to intimidate me up the aisle in an arena?
I'm just
curious. Is he going to, like, stalk me up an aisle and try to berate me along the way?
You're not for that. I remember that now. But Carol, what was your? I thought you were a fan.
Look, the guy's brilliant. I'm not opposed to his knowledge and message. It's just his voice and style I can't deal with.
He's a bully.
Wow, this is really interesting. Just when you think,
did we pop your balloon? Did we burst your bubble before you even had to float it up?
Yeah, pretty much. But I will say this. We can just using him as an example. So this year, 2023, we're only into basically the first month, and I've participated in two challenges. One was with Gabby Bernstein, who's like Tony Robbins light, and she's a woman. And then this Tony Robbins challenge. And here's what I'm going to say to people who don't have the time or the inclination to participate in these sort of self-help challenges. here's the benefit I think that comes from them. And trust me, you guys, like Tony Robbins' challenge was to do 10 hours plus, which I'm not even all the way done with it because I ain't got that kind of time. And a lot of people don't have that kind of time. So I'm squeezing it in. But the benefit of these challenges is it forces you to pay attention to the things in your life that you are not paying attention to, the things that you're taking for granted, which I think we all do. So anything that makes you stop and go, oh, yeah, that's right, I am awesome. Or, you know, that's right, this is what I really want to work on and this is what I want to focus on. There's a benefit to that. So whether it's Tony Robbins, Gabby Bernstein, or anybody, if you're kind of feeling stuck in any area of your life, taking a minute to focus on where you want to be, not focus on kind of what you're stuck on, focus on the finish line is going to be immensely beneficial. So I am liking this challenge because that's what it's forcing me to do. I don't know about
to,
you. Know.
To what? To notice when you're frustrated and flip it?
Yeah, see, that's a good point because there are like 1.5 million people in this challenge and they're all from all different countries and walks of life. I think for me, what it's doing is reminding me that my comfort zone, and we all have them, right? Everybody listening to us, all of us have our comfort zone. Our comfort zones don't allow us to get bigger. And sometimes our comfort zones don't allow us to become all that we want to become because we're stuck in comfort. And what Tony Robbins' challenge is doing is saying, well, wait a minute, you know, if your internal thermometer using if your internal thermometer is set to 71, you won't be able to get bigger or smaller because you're always going to come back to that comfort zone. So he uses an analogy that like when people are, let's say you're motoring along and you're having a great life, right? Your life is good and your thermostat is set at 71 degrees and something happens that knocks you off knocks you on your butt, takes the rug out from underneath you. And now all of a sudden you're not 71 degrees, you're 55 degrees. You're going to climb and crawl and get back up to 71 degrees because that's where you're comfortable. And that's a good thing. But he also says, if you want to find success, like let's say you're at 71 degrees and all of a sudden you make a shift and you get more money or you get this job or you get this wonderful relationship, but now you're not at 71 degrees, you're at 90 degrees. Your internal comfort zone will want to bring you back down to 71. And I thought that was pretty enlightening. So he teaches people, or at least lets you figure out how to get up and away from your comfort zone. And I don't see how that's ever really a bad thing.
I think I think that's a great thing.
Changing your, he says that the biggest motivating thing, I'm giving away a couple of his secrets so you don't have to take the challenge.
But okay, really, Frankenberry, see, you can put your pen down.
I'm safe. Hold on. I'm going to send a Facebook post. I'm typing it right now. Frankenberry marks himself safe from a Tony Robbins challenge. Okay, there we go.
Yeah, and he's not using a pen. He's slathering his peanut butter onto his jelly, not paying a bit of attention to me right now, I'm sure.
So anyway, go ahead. Oh, that was funny.
It is kind of enlightening. And like I said, all it really does is force you to shine a light on yourself. That's, I think, well, at least for me, that's what these last two challenges have done. And that's not so bad. Because I did find it interesting. And that's something different than what I normally do. But also, by the time this show airs, I will have experienced my front row seats to the Michael Jackson musical on Broadway, where I am.
Oh, when was the last time you saw a live Broadway show?
Right. When was that? Ooh.
Wow.
Wow. Now, it was. Wow, guys.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I will tell you, not that long ago, within the last year, I saw Sarah Jessica Parker and her husband. Okay. Yeah, it was a play, so it wasn't a musical, which is different because normally I go to musicals. So that was fun.
So that'll be cool.
That's going to be really cool.
And front row, too. How'd you manage that?
Yeah. So that's kind of weird. And I'm almost a little skeptical that I got these.
Frankenberry, this is going to be a story next show. Fake tickets.
I'm sure it is.
I'm going to tell you why. It's not what you think. I didn't buy it. You know how you can sometimes get these tickets aftermarket, whatever, people resell them. They get them and they resell them. And I've done that plenty of times without incident. These tickets I actually got directly, you know, directly.
Oh, okay. So how'd you get front row?
Right. So that's why I'm skeptical. I'm like, why are these front row seats still available? And now I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe our necks are going to have to be at like, 180 degrees and it's going to be, we're going to be spit on by every single singer in the show. I don't know.
has the show been reviewed? Well,
that was my next question.
Is it a ticket that's a happening one? Like, you know, a gotta go kind of thing?
You would think.
Gang, I don't pay a lick of attention to other people's opinions about stuff I want to overpay money for. Okay.
I'm just curious as to what the buzz is. I wouldn't know what the buzz is because I don't care. But like, say, for instance, something like Hamilton, you know, that was like the show. That was where even if you didn't want to see the show, you had to go to the show so people could see that you went. Or so that you could tell people that you went. So where is this show compared to that? Maybe that's why the front rows were so easy to come upon.
Now, that's a great question. It definitely doesn't have the buzz of Hamilton. And sidebar, I never did go see Hamilton. I don't know.
Neither did I.
You never did either?
Nope.
But here's what, you know, I know Michael Jackson had a lot of controversy, you know, later in his life, but we grew up on his music, you guys.
And I can't imagine that not being good, honestly. So, he's got so much great music.
And, so I'm actually really looking forward to it. I'm taking my cousins. Like, we all grew up in the same era. I remember, this is kind of embarrassing, but not really. And since we're going to be talking about fun later, I remember being like, I don't know, 5, 6, in that neighborhood. Do you remember like when we were a kid, we had these big stand-up vacuums with the big vacuum bags. They were like, you know, 400.
The Kirby.
Yes.
It was metal and it weighed more than me.
It weighed more than you. It was taller than you. Like
God.
And I remember more than once I would take that thing and that was my microphone and I would stand in front of the TV and I would sing along to Michael Jackson, to all the different, that I was on stage and that was my mic. And I,
boy, do you think your mother might have a picture of that? Because it could be pretty valuable.
That would be. And I don't think we do, but yeah, those were good times. So
was that before or after you kept passing out from piercing your ears?
About the same time before.
Yeah,
at the time that I was used to pass out over my ears being pierced, that I was a little older. I was like 10. And the person that I would imitate, believe it or not, was Cher. I was convinced when I was 10 that I could perfectly imitate Cher's singing voice. And to further convince myself of that, I would force my parents, most especially my mother, to gather around. I would make them gather around and I would stand there and I would basically audition for them imitating Cher's voice, singing, you know, like half breed and gypsies, tramps and thieves.
Can you do it? Can you give us a little taste now?
So there's no way you could be pulling me on across a gravel roadway right now by a big truck tires and I would not do it this day, but I would do it for them regularly. And they would, I remember this is when I first started to have my dream shattered, because they would say, you know, gee, honey, that's nice, but not everybody can be a famous singer.
That's nice. Well, and they shattered your dreams of being a cook too.
That's right. All my parents shattered all my damn dreams.
I was just going to say, look where Jonna is now. She never goes into her kitchen and she can't sing.
She has people.
Oh, that's right. Yes. But she did get a job where she has enough money to have people.
Yeah, so something works. They didn't shadow them all.
That's a message we got to tell our kids these days, right? You better work hard and figure it out. That or get people.
That's right. Your dreams won't come true, but we need you to find a job that'll make you a lot of money so you can have people.
Isn't that funny, though? Like, but you guys didn't do that? Like, you didn't try to...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. So I had two older sisters. One is only 18 months older than me. So she and I hung out a lot more when we weren't trying to pull each other's hair out. But we would do, like, there was a period of time, especially my sister, that the hair dryer, the hairbrush, anything became a microphone.
Yep. Well, you see, now I never did that. I mean, yes, I was a big fan of music and I did sing along and all, but I didn't pretend that I had a microphone. But I think I waited until I got into my late 50s before I actually started doing it for real.
And you actually can sing.
Yeah,
you can.
So now I'm like, okay, so all those times that I didn't grab, you know, a comb to sing into it, well, I waited 50 years or 40 years and now I'm doing it now.
And you know what else, Frank? Not only can you sing, but you also write the music. In addition to writing, you know, prose, you write the songs.
No, I write the lyrics. I borrow music beds from our production site, but then I do all the rest.
And I don't even think you're auto-tuning that stuff. You're just boom.
just a few effects, but it's fun.
It's fun. Frankie Murray.
What? Did I just have a segue?
Oh!
Wow, that's like
accidental segue.
Yes, just to let you folks know, that's like the third one in 11 years.
I know.
The third one. Maybe even the second.
And you didn't even do it on purpose.
I did not do it on purpose.
Credit.
Well, give me credit. Yes. Okay, there you go. I appreciate that.
All right, so we're gonna roll with that. We're gonna roll with that because, as a reminder, coming up next, we are going to be speaking with the one, the only, author of The Fun Habit, how the pursuit of joy and wonder can change your life. And that includes singing into the handle of a vacuum cleaner, even in your later years.
All right. We've got Dr. Rucker on the way. And you've got Jonna Spilgore and Carol Pesci. You've got myself, and we will be back with the doc. So please stick around.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back, everyone, to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilgore and Carol Pesci. And it's time now to get to our guest. And we have with us today a Dr. Rucker going to be talking about his new book. Isn't that right?
That's correct. The Fun Habit.
Well, and who doesn't want to talk about having fun? But as I promised you, this book is actually going to change the life of anybody who is struggling on how to be happy. And I know that sounds like a weird concept, but there are a lot of people who do struggle with that. So before we get into the book, let's talk a little bit about Dr. Mike Rucker, who is a PhD author, speaker, and educator focusing on the science of fun. He's a charter member of the International Positive Psychology Association and a former writer for Very Well Health. His ideas on fun and health have been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Thrive Global, Box, Business Insider, and a bunch of other publications. Now, I'm not done because I have a funny little quote. Dr. Rucker is recognized as a top influencer in the area of well-being and says, quote, I love this quote, not bad for someone whose name first appeared on the internet as the guy who swept the floors on the television show Baywatch. We're going to talk to you about that. He joins us today to discuss his brand new book, The Fun Habit, How the Pursuit of Joy and Wonder Can Change Your Life. Dr. Mike Rucker, welcome to Happy Hour.
Thank you so much for having me. Can't wait to dig in.
Yeah, but before we do that, I just got to ask you. So did you really sweep the floors on the television show Baywatch?
I did, yes. That's early on in my career, I wanted to be in entertainment and did have a stint. Ultimately, actually, what's kind of in the book is, you know, I think if you want to live in that world, you essentially have to mortgage so much other aspects of your life. But in my 20s, it certainly was enjoyable. And I got that job before email. So I had graduated with a master's from Chapman University, which is a film school in Los Angeles. And I blasted my resume via fax to like 40 different television shows. And they're the ones that called back.
You're aging yourself. Yeah, fax.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh my God. And then you waited for your pager to go off.
I was just going to say the same thing.
Right.
You beat me to it. But I got to say, though, Doctor, that had to be a pretty grueling job because that's a lot of freaking sand.
No. So, you know, what's funny is we were on a soundstage in Marina Del Rey. So we shot in Dockweiler for sure. And, but a lot of the PAs would stay in the office. So, for folks that know the area, it's right underneath LSU, or that's where the soundstage was. And so, yeah, so certainly there was a lot to do and, you know, the cast of characters were amazing, but, you know, eclectic. So I look back at that time with a lot of fond memories. It was a lot of fun. Hasselhoff is a great guy. So.
And I was just going to say, that's kind of, you started your career having fun and now you're writing a book called The Fun Habit, because this is what I'm getting so far from your book, Doctor. You really take a novel approach on how to be happy. And, you know, people, everybody strives to be happy. Happy is a good thing. It's always a good thing. But a lot of people find it hard to achieve. So we're going to talk to our audience about this very simple approach. But first, why did you feel this book needed to be written?
Well, I think we're, you know, getting to connect at an interesting time because I've just gotten back from the book tour. And to answer your question quickly, I was one of those folks striving for happiness. I'm a charter member of the International Positive Psychology Association. And for folks that don't know what positive psychology is, it's essentially a facet of clinical psychology, not to treat mental illness per se, but tools for betterment that, you know, are accessible to anyone. And so I was, you know, an early member of that cohort and got access, you know, to all of these tools fairly early. And I love research. So I was applying all of these things in my own life. But essentially what happened is I over-optimized for happiness. And during that time, whether, you know, I always call it serendipitous, but I don't know, you know, when you get bad news, is that serendipitous? But I guess if it illuminates a problem, you know, that does qualify. There was this emerging research that this is a trend in the US, right? You know, whether it's through hustle porn, whether it's through the curated lives of others and trying to live up to that ideal, or whether it's just that we're so burnt out and we know that something's missing, but we can't quite grab onto it. So we're trying really hard, but it becomes elusive. You know, there's multiple headwinds and one might apply to one and, you know, others will apply to others, but there's so many reasons for this, right? But essentially the bottom line is, myself included, those that over-optimize, like, hey, I want to become as happy as possible, paradoxically, are becoming some of the most unhappy people, especially here in the U.S., because it seems a fairly U.S.-centric problem from, you know, all these folks that I'm talking to that, like yourself, are resonating with the message of the book.
Exactly. You know, I mentioned to you off the air that I'm partway through the book and I've already had a few aha moments. And one of them, and you do discuss this early on, is that some people, the harder they try to be happy, the less happy they are. And you never think about it that way. You always think, well, if I'm striving for happiness and I do things to make me happy, then I'm going to be happy. But so many people aren't. And I think that's part of the reason why you developed, quote, the fun habit, which is kind of like the cure for people who are trying to be happy, but don't know how. So let's talk. What is the fun habit?
Yeah. So to unpack kind of what's gone awry, right? I think there's a couple things. One, especially in psychology, but you see it across the spectrum of, you know, actualizing happiness. We've quantified it to the degree that, you know, once you reach sort of a peak, there's nowhere to go but down, right? And so that becomes like what happens when you hit your mark, right? Like, oh, great, I'm as happy as I want to be. Like that, the sustainability of that is almost impossible. And it's not your fault. There's evolutionary reasons we're not meant to be satiated, right? Or there wouldn't be progress. And so, you know, when that becomes the goal, there's going to be some failure somewhere along the line. And so that's one reason. The other is that when we ruminate on the fact that we're not happy, which is what happened to me, again, you know, kind of adding more context to my backstory, I was fairly happy. I had, you know, the marriage I wanted, a great job, but then my younger brother passed away quite suddenly, which really just, you know, knocked me out. And then I also had a sports injury that meant I couldn't run again. And so both my identity and sort of my worldview have been broken into pieces. And so happiness wasn't an appropriate sort of response to that, but because I had so over-optimized that, you know, happiness is the way, the more I tried to will myself out of that, you know, through these aspects of, you know, trying to find things to be grateful for, or, you know, really forcing mindfulness, when really the appropriate response was to mourn these pretty heavy, you know, emotions, and celebrate them rather than, you know, discount them and say, okay, I can just get through this, you know, without any help. And so those are the two things that, you know, really make happiness problematic. But that doesn't mean we can't live a life of joy and delight if you become mindful of the experiences that you do have access to. So having a fun habit, there's really two components. One, understanding that you have agency and autonomy, that even if you're not really in a great emotional state, likely you can change that through a whole host of different interesting tools, whether that's simple reframing, you know, which I bring up in the book, to just realizing like, hey, you know, today sucked, but I'm going to make sure that I prioritize some fun this weekend, either with a fun friend, you know, to just enjoy that time, even if I, you know, it's to dump on them a little bit because I'm going through something challenging, or reengaging, you know, with the things that you used to enjoy because they've been habituated out of your life. Again, I think one of the challenges is that all of these situations are going to be unique to the individual, but the good news is there's a host of tools to get you back on the rails.
Mike, I want to jump in here for a second. This is Carol on your comment about today stuff and what you went through. And I have discovered this the hard way. I followed a very similar path with you about everything that I understood and learned about happiness and how important it is, and denied myself the opportunity to allow myself to feel sadness or anger. Or and if I did, then I would further judge myself and unknowingly amplify the negative emotions. And there is something, and you mentioned this in your book, about toxic positivity, that yes, we all have the ability to be happy in our lives and have more fun. And you mentioned this early on in your book, it's important to allow ourselves to grieve or to feel those negative emotions. You're not failing at life. You mentioned something about positive vibes only. And I think that while maybe well-intended, that that has been taken too far, and being human involves days that suck.
Yeah, I think I almost bought the bumper sticker one time because, you know, in that period, I was like, oh, you know, as an ideal, this seems right.
Right. But it's not healthy.
No, there's three quick bullets, and there's a much broader story here. But the three quick bullets of why this becomes important. One is, you know, this work comes from Barbara Fredrickson. It's called Broaden Build. We know, because to some degree, experiencing joy requires contrast. If we're always optimizing for, you know, these things that aren't necessarily realistic within life, because there's going to be pain, there's going to be change, right? That's just part of the human condition. Then we don't have that wide spectrum to experience like, wow, this is really cool because yesterday was really terrible. And mm-hmm. So you really condense your ability to understand emotion, right? Because, you know, you're kind of skirting the fact that there's other aspects of life that are just meant for us to experience bad or good. The other is that when the motivation doesn't hit, that creates this dissonance. And so what we know is that, if that comes your way, right? Especially if it comes from a friend, like, oh, just look at the bright side. Like, is that what I'm supposed to be doing? And like, we now know, no, it's absolutely not. It's okay to be like, this is terrible. What do I need to do to fix it? Or, you know, do I need to sit with these things and process them so mm-hmm. they don't sit in my subconscious yep. and, you know, eat away at my mental hygiene? But instead we've been fed this thing like, hey, you'll get through it. You know, like, and so when that motivation just doesn't hit, you know, it becomes quote unquote toxic, right? Because it's just not connecting with where you are within your resonance. And so what we know is like, your brain starts to be, there must be something wrong, and there's nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, I meant with you, you know, there's clearly something wrong with your situation that you need to unpack, you know, figure out what your options are, understand what that means in the context of yourself, but we're skirting that. And that work is very important. I think we're just realizing that, to give some folks grace, like me and you that have gone through it. Right. I think we're just now, the work I really like, you know, I name dropped Barbara, but also Dr. Iris Mouse out of Cal. I mean, they're really understanding that, especially in individualistic societies like our own. And I don't mean that, you know, in a pejorative, it's just true, right? We champion our successes. We tout, you know, who we are through social media, really generally just telling people about ourselves. You know, we're in collectivist societies. You see people not just share, you know, their joys, but also their burdens together, right? Which dissipates, you know, both the excitement, but then also the pain. And so since we are kind of N of ones in this society, when those things don't hit, we hold them immensely and we feel lonely, right? We're seeing that, you know, Robert has a great book out right now, you know, selling well like my own, you know, about his big study on this, right? Like, we know that when these types of thoughts lead to loneliness. So we're like, why aren't we like other people? Even though the other people are just like us, you're just, you know, succumbing to their curated experience, you know, through the lens of social media or whatever it is, that, you know, that loneliness starts to lead to true, not just psychological negative outcomes, but also physiological negative outcomes, unfortunately. So this is getting to be really serious stuff. Right. We're seeing it across the board with regards to us being unhappier than we ever have been, more burnt out than we ever have been. And then, you know, don't even get me started with us being second to last with regards to just, you know, even getting access to leisure. And the fact that even though we're second to last within the developed world, only half of the people are even taking their 2 weeks off, right? There's just so many components.
So that's the tough side, and that's the reality. But then here you come along with such a unique approach to how people can enjoy their lives more rather than pursuing happiness and employing some of these practices. It's really quite simple. And you come along and you say, develop the habit of fun. Plan and look for ways to do fun things. It's that simple.
And it really is. I mean, one of the things that illuminated, like, two big takeaways for anyone that's feeling resistance to this, because you're not alone. You know, busy adults are always like, okay, yeah, this guy's telling me to live a life of whimsy, whatever. And so there's two things, right? There's one is, like, the biggest eye-opening thing for me as I was collecting this work is a study out of MIT, Stanford, and Harvard that has a huge sample size, 28,000 different participants. And it found that when we're ground to a nub, then we do look for what psychology calls passive leisure, you know, things of escapism that aren't necessarily leading to our betterment. But perhaps not a glass of wine with a partner where you're, you know, snuggling and enjoying good conversation, but a crate of wine. Yes, that falls into that category. But the people that are being deliberate about it, you know, that schedule what we call active leisure and are really enjoying themselves, are creating what, you know, we call transition rituals. So they know when work is over and they know, you know, these times for renewal, you know, in a similar way that sleep is now protected. You know, they're doing the same thing with leisure. These are the folks that show up the next day with the vitality and vigor to do the hard work. So the most successful people, paradoxically, are the ones that are also engaging in fun and leisure in a way that revitalizes them the next day rather than it being depleting. And so many of us know that, right? Like, if you're getting home after work and just dropping down on the couch and channel surfing, you know, shows where if I asked you 2 weeks from now, hey, what were you watching? You couldn't even tell me. And you're pretending that that's fun, then, you know, a radical course corrective is needed. And I make that case. The other is, the most successful people I've found are also premeditated about it. And that doesn't sound that fun, but it's just what we need to do. You know, I actually just heard a really interesting podcast about, you know, with a sexual health expert. And the same is, you know, with anything that we kind of enjoy, but that gets, you know, organized out of our life because we're so busy now, you know, especially the folks in the so-called sandwich generation, where for the first time ever in our history, because we're having kids later and our parents are living later, you know, we're having to take care of both our kids and our aging parents. So we are busier than we ever have been. So it really does require a plan, as unfun as that sounds, right? Like, just get over that first little hump. Yes, planning fun, you know, it is weird and you should roll your eyes at it. But once you do it, guess what? Not only are you having a lot more fun, but then you're also being more productive. So that's where it's really like, oh, wait a second. You know, like, it's an easy sell once you can get someone to do it for 2 to 3 weeks, because they realize, like, every aspect of my life is better now.
You know, I'm going to agree with that and add to it, because I think we've been on the air now for, I don't know, 11 or 12 years. And if you asked me a dozen years ago if I felt that taking time off was important, I would have probably throat punched you and said, what are you talking about? Like, no. Right. And then our show developed and we've talked to a number of guests, and Carol actually helped me along with this. I do think there is such value in taking a breather from how hard you work and how hard you hustle. And that will actually make you more productive. And I've started doing it, not just personally, and I'm talking little stuff, you guys. I mean, like, I'll say to myself, I do have to do 3 hours worth of work, but before I do that, I'm going to take a break from noon to one, and I'm going to get lost in a rerun of Real Housewives of New York, whatever, like something really small. It's not jumping on a plane and going on a week long vacation. But also, absolutely, because I'm a boss, I realize if that's important to me, it's got to be important to my team. So I make sure that they know if they need time off to take their father to the doctor, if they need time off to take their dog to the vet, if they need time off to do something that I don't want them to stress about, they can have it. And I think I have a happier crew because of it. So it's not just for you personally. You could spread that.
Exactly right. So for the folks that feel like this might be potentially selfish, you hit the nail on the head. If you want to dig into the science, just Google social contagion. But this isn't just for yourself. When you start to have fun, then it becomes infectious and everyone around you, you know, starts to enjoy themselves more. And, you know, so what used to be a downward spiral becomes an upward spiral. And it's incredibly important, so important that folks that are able to get to the last chapter in the book, I think the one thing that just really blew me away is that folks that are making the biggest impacts in the world, the ones that have any longevity, are the ones that are finding a way, even in the world's worst problems, like, human trafficking and food shortages and things of this nature, are still at least finding ways to enjoy the process, because the ones that don't have any legs to continue on. So here are people, you know, some of the most benevolent people in the world that are wanting to do good, but just don't have the capacity to do it. Because once you get into a life that's depleting and not enjoyable, you just have nothing left, and you usually burn out within a year or two. So this isn't just about, you know, being happier and having more fun. It's really about being the best version of yourself at the end of the day. And the problem is, these are things that require equity, right? Like, yeah, you kind of enjoy yourself for a week. It might seem fun. It might seem novel, but it's not going to do much, right? You don't have fun for 6 months, and all of a sudden you're going to go, what the hell happened? Why am I burnt out, right? And you're not going to connect the dots. It's because you're not living a life that's joyful to you.
And it's not selfish. You're making yourself healthier. You're able to show up better in every aspect of your life when you allow yourself permission and deliberately choose to enjoy your life more. You can be a better parent, a better employee, a better leader. And I've said this many times before, how important it is. And I think it's a little bit more difficult for women, because I think we are wired to serve or to parent or caregivers. I think it applies to everybody, but
no,
parents,
but the data supports your assertion.
Okay, good. Yeah. Right. So would the parents feel like they're being the best version of themselves when they completely sacrifice anything that brings them happiness, joy, and they put their families or their children first? There will always be those times that people that we care about need us and we need to show up for them. But if we don't pause and take care of our own self care, we're doing two things. We're burning ourselves out. We'll ultimately become resentful. We're not enjoying our lives. We're making ourselves physically sick. And as a parent, you're then teaching your child to grow up and live that same adulthood.
Oh, absolutely. It's especially with insidious social media use, because I do not villainize social media in the same way others do. I think it's an interesting tool. Certainly, you know, I enjoy it so much with my ability to share my kids' experiences with, you know, our family circle. But that said, if you're walking in, you know, from the office into your home, and you're, you know, on a call, you know, just because it was convenient, and then your child sees you doing that and models your behavior by not getting off Minecraft right when you ask them because they want your attention when you get home. Like, you don't have to, you know, beat yourself up about it, but it, you know, kids model behavior. So the example you're setting, that they're going to think it's okay. And we certainly live in a world right now where, you know, I think, you know, because of corporal punishment, things of that nature, you know, do what I say, not what I do was a little bit, you know, maybe you could get away with it in my parents' generation, but I just don't see that working very well now. I mean, I really think you need to model the behavior you want to see in your kids more so than ever. And anyways, so I'm just backing up your sentiment.
And maybe in that regard, you should also model your kids, because kids don't usually have a problem trying to find joy.
That's right, John, is such a good point.
No, I write about that.
Such a great point.
No, they're the best teachers, especially if you set the stage for play. Like, another, you know, thing where people get hung up on is like, well, I wanted to teach my son baseball. Like, okay, that's great. That's a teaching moment. It might not necessarily be, you know, what you're prioritizing for fun. That's like you value baseball. Your kid has indicated that they want to do that. And so this hour is meant for you guys to, you know, get towards a path of mastery, like certainly try and have fun. But if, you know, there's reasons for you need to teach and things like that, then do that and then figure out what's fun after that, right? Is it like, for my son and I, it's go-kart racing. People get hung up on that. Like, it doesn't need to be everything. Like, and so I, you know, that's where I would go with that.
And it could be what's fun for you. I know we have to wrap up, but we could talk about fun forever, because I do say that if you're struggling with how to be happy, if you're within the sound of our voice, you got to pick up this book, because the concepts are simple and you just have to learn to do what's fun for you, but then do it. And I think you'll be amazed. So, Dr. Rucker, if people want to connect with you, I know the book is available everywhere. It's on Amazon. And again, the book is called, hold on a second, I want to make sure I get the whole thing right. The book is called The Fun Habit, How the Pursuit of Joy and Wonder Can Change Your Life. It is available on Amazon. And also, Dr. Rucker, if people want to connect with you, is the best place at your website, which is michaelrucker.com.
That's right. Yeah, you can find me there. I have, you know, various essays on the science of fun, especially for folks that like to see the research, and all my social channels are available there too, if you want to play on social media.
Yeah, you're all over. You have a lot of followers on the gram.
That's what it's called now. It's on the gram.
That's what we kids are calling it. The gram.
We kids.
Yeah, you guys ventured into TikTok. Like, speaking of kids and fun, it's one where you know, I've been invited several times, and I'm like, I don't know if that's a playground I want to put foot on yet.
Well, you know what the problem I have with TikTok is? It's all the dancing videos, because I watch one for like 5 seconds and I pull something.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I mean? I get hammies just watching them.
Oh my goodness! You might be joking, but that scenario literally played out last night for
me. Oh my god!
All right. Well, listen, Doc. Thank you so much for joining us. And right after we end this phone call, by the way, John is probably going to jump on with Carol and I and say, "So what's the sitch for next week?"
What's the sitch?
Yeah, what's
on the gram?
Yes, but anyway, Doc, thank you so much for joining us today. We much appreciate it, and we're not done yet with Happy Hour here this morning. We still got segment three, on the way with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci, and we will be right back with that. So please stick around.
Live better and laugh harder. It's Sunday morning and Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM.
And welcome back one more time this morning to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello,
Frankenberry.
Oh, nicely done. Nicely done, girlfriends.
I should have sung that like Cher. That's what I'm going to do next.
There you go. You just need a hairbrush, or, you know, you need to put yourself in danger with a vacuum cleaner. But hey, thanks very much to the doc for talking to us about his book.
Yeah. I'm totally, absolutely, 100% going to deliberately plan more fun things. There's just so much to be said for it. And, you know, there's ways when we look at kids and you think as an adult, you know, so much more than them. And there really is so much wisdom in the life of, and brain and heart of a child that's all they do is search for the next fun thing to do. And why not?
Right. Because we forget that as we get older, and it is helpful and it can change kind of, you know, I was talking about Tony Robbins when we jumped on here, but one of the things that having fun or deliberately having fun will do is change your state. And if you're having a bad day or a bad month or a bad year, even taking 5 minutes out of your day to do something that brings you joy and is just purely fun can be miraculous. So why don't we?
Because I think we have tipped the scales so far that we put our worth in what we do and accomplish. That's what determines our success. That's what determines our worth. And there is something to be said for that. And when we pause and take the time to be silly and do things fun, or even, you know, a lazy day or while, that's an investment in us as well, in our state of being.
Right. But I think one of the reasons, though, that we don't necessarily do that is that a lot of us have been told that that's just frivolous stuff. You need to work. You know, so you actually don't, because we've been kind of ingrained to say, well, really, am I allowed to have fun?
Yeah, I think that's a whole new conversation around that.
Yeah. And you have had conversations around this, Carol, and you've incorporated this concept into probably all of your books. But, you know, life is meant to be fun. We're supposed to have joy. You can have all the success and have joy. You can go through the trials and tribulations and have joy. Joy is a necessary ingredient.
Yeah.
And we forget.
And it's not a waste of time. It's an investment. And it's infectious, right? When you're laughing or when you're happy, that spreads to people around you. Your energy affects the people around you.
Oh, yeah. And the opposite, right? Have you ever been around somebody who's like Eeyore?
Energy vampire? Yep.
So I think this is easy to follow, because if you just want to add fun into your life, you add some fun into your life. It doesn't have to be a 30-day thing. It could be a five minute fun thing. So yep. it's pretty brilliant.
Sure is.
Yes. And thanks very much for the doc for taking the time to join us this morning. And all right. Well, I think we are good there, ladies. Anything else I'm missing here this morning? Any challenges I should be taking this week, Spielborg?
No, but don't forget to listen into Jeannie Kelly's podcast, Credit Over Coffee.
I will go take a look for that and see if I can learn anything.
Yeah,
you know,
right after the show is a good time to do that, because our audience will be drinking their coffee as they listen to us this morning. So while that cup is still hot, on over to Jeannie Kelly's podcast, Credit Over Coffee. And I'll report back on the Michael Jackson musical next week.
All right. Well, looking forward to that. So everybody, thank you for joining us this morning. To Dr. Rucker one more time, and for Jonas Spielbore and Carol Pesci, I'm Frankenberry, and please join us again next week. Until then, be safe.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonas Spielbore and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM.